Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about the suppression of political dissent in Uganda as longtime leader Yoweri Museveni plans to extend his rule. And with us tonight is Charles Mwanguhia. Charles is the bureau chief of the East African newspaper in Uganda. He's joining us by phone from Kampala. Good evening, Charles.
Good evening, Charles. Good evening, Douglas.
How are you doing today?
How are you doing today?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Fine, thank you.
And also we're joined by Suleiman Mgula. He's joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Douglas. Good evening, Charles. And good evening to our listeners.
Thank you very much and welcome to the show, gentlemen. As I said, tonight we're talking about the suppression of political dissent in Uganda as the president there tries to extend his rule. A draft legislation that could extend President Museveni's rule is in the works in Parliament, but it has a lot of... it would involve changing, amending the constitution, and has a lot of resistance from a wide section of people. Let me begin in Kampala with Charles. First, put up to date, we understand today Kampala was like a garrison city. Hello, Charles, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you hear me, or do you want me to repeat the question?
No, please repeat the question.
I was saying we understand Kampala today looked like a garrison city as Parliament tried to table a draft amendment to the constitution. How is the situation there?
Well, not the entire Kampala. I think that would be a stretch. But the areas around Parliament, around the Constitution Square, which is the main city square, the areas around Makerere University and Wandegea, and areas around Chambogo, which is back to the east of the city. Those were fairly heavily deployed with both the military and the police for last evening and early morning. You could also add areas of Kansanga, but in particular to one office of an international affiliation, the Action Aid International Uganda office in Kansanga, which had been under lockdown since yesterday evening, and another NGO, the Great Lakes Institute for Strategic Studies in Mpinda, which is one of the affluent suburbs of Kampala, where the city, commercial city, is formed.
I see. And we also understand offices of political parties were also surrounded, and the Lord Mayor of Kampala was put under arrest. Is that correct, too?
That's correct. The office of the Forum for Democratic Change was under lockdown. Home, not just of the Lord Mayor of Kampala, but home of some prominent politicians, especially in the opposition side, had police presence, significant police presence. The leader of opposition parliament, Winnie Kiza, told parliament that our house, our children, woke up to find the house under siege. That would also apply to the Kemudu Landa, among others, they had their offices, their homes under siege. So if you aggregate that, you might say that a large portion of Kampala were kind of under military police and military under police.
I see. Suleiman, that appears to be that the government is determined to push through this amendment.
I think so, but I think we have to understand that it is not trying, it is going to force it through, because I think for all purposes and for all intents and purposes, Uganda since 1986 has never been a democracy. I think it is a quasi-democracy. Generally, we have got a mixture of some limited democracies which people misunderstand to be outright democracy. I think we need to classify countries like Uganda, like Ethiopia, much as they hold elections and they have got some limited democracy. They are not actually democracies. They are military regimes which are dressed in civilian uniforms. And then, apart from that, I think what is happening is not unexpected. I think from what came out of the February 2016 election, I think the country has been largely restless. There is a lack of legitimacy for the ruling president. First of all, he was challenged at party level by a fairly well-experienced Ugandan and a party member and a founder member of his own party, so someone who is equal to the task. And he manipulated that very person out of competing. So at that level, he lacks legitimacy from the party level. Then at a national level, the elections were marred by a lot of irregularities. Actually, as we speak, I think there is a parallel government because the leading opposition leader or leading opposition party refused to accept the election results, and it decided to make a parallel government, though it has got no offices. But symbolically, it shows that there is a contested election. Actually, to be clear, the candidate, the opposition candidate, was not even allowed to present a petition for all the irregularities that took place. So even that one also builds on the sort of illegitimacy which is on the president. So the president has got two blemishes, both at his political party level and also at a national level. So there is a restlessness in the country, and this one now has been brought in the middle of that restlessness. That is why you see a vulnerable president trying to protect himself against a background where he's even doubted whether he's actually a president of a party and a country.
I see. Charles, the U.S. Ambassador to Uganda issued a statement expressing concern about the arrests there and raids that stiff for Uganda people's rights to free expression and tarnish Uganda's global image. So did the European Union ambassadors in Kampala. What's the government's reaction to all these concerns?
I have seen a statement from the executive director of the Uganda Government Media Center, who is in effect the frontline government spokesperson, Opono Opondo, which is rather dismissive of the statements both of the American ambassador and the European Union ambassador in Uganda, wants to ask them to stay away from Ugandan's domestic affairs and telling them that what is going on, the assessment of security threats, is a matter for Uganda to resolve, and trying to emphasize that in the government's thinking, these NGOs are accessing foreign funding to do illegal or criminal activities in the country. I visited the Action Aid offices yesterday, and I've been following closely the search at the office of the Great Lakes Institute for Strategic Studies, which I think has just ended. The police has moved to the home of one of the directors of that organization, and Mr. Godbert Mshale. They are trying to think that the government thinks that these NGOs are bringing in money from foreign sources, and they are funding some of the activities. It's opposition to move the like amending the constitution to reform Article 102B, which creates the limitation that would prevent President Museveni from running again once his current term expires in 2021. That is born partly out of paranoia. The government has been extremely uncomfortable with NGOs. You might want to remember that he passed a new NGO law, which is quite restrictive and quite restrictive to the NGO operations, but also makes the render then extremely vulnerable to interventions like what is going on now. What the government says, I think, to realize is that the sentiment against the amendment to Article 102B seems much widespread among ordinary Ugandans across the country. And if you follow social media, if you follow discussions, if you follow the interest with which people, in spite of the heavy police deployment, braved, especially young students at Makerere and Kamuzu University, braved that confrontation with the military and the police, and the people gathering around a parliament, you know, largely called them though, government would be better advised that some of this sentiment is not necessarily being fanned or funded by civil society actors. I think it's some kind of level of paranoia within the establishment that gave some of these actions.
I see. Suleiman, today, I think a group of junior ministers expressed their solidarity in amending the constitution and allowing the removal of age limit. Those in power don't seem to feel the concerns of the people, do you think?
Of course, there is a very big disconnect between those in power and those being led, because it is a quasi-democracy. All these people are brought into parliament at the whims of the president. I think by now we are very much aware of the nature of politics in Uganda, that the nature of politics in Uganda demands that you have to get a green light from the president, because he's the one who has got the money to allow you to campaign, he's the one who has got the money to allow you to bribe to be able to get the votes. So you should sympathize with them, because they are there not because of merit, they are there not because they are the choice of the people, they are there because they have been able to be manipulated to the offices of the being members of parliament. So that is why President Museveni is their main godfather. Without them, they cannot be there. So we shouldn't be surprised when they are there to support him or to support a bill which will make them stay in parliament. You also realize that many of these people, they are not the most best qualified. Some of them are toms and ordinary people. Some of them with lesser qualification, with controversial qualifications. So there isn't much about them, whether ministers or no ministers. It is still the same. The system is discriminatory. There is a group which is discriminating the larger part of the country. Instead, that is what is supposed to be discussed. That is why you see there is a lot of restlessness in the whole country as far as the lifting of the term of the age limit is concerned.
Charles, this state of affairs seems to have impacted the parliament itself, because the parliament didn't go ahead with this, adjourned it to next week. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Members of the parliament were concerned about the heavy presence of the military and the police within the precincts of parliament and outside parliament building. They were not allowed to drive in with their cars, which is a normal practice. They were told to park their cars outside of parliament and walk through. The security was concerned that some people have been threatened to ban parliament. And since we have had incidents in this country before of demonstrators carrying painted, mostly yellow painted things into parliament, I think they were concerned that, especially those opposing to the move to amend the constitution, would smuggle in wrong elements to cause a demonstration in parliament. So that was quite discomforting. And the Deputy Speaker presided, Jacob Olanya, after he had spoken and the Leader of Opposition had spoken, members of the opposition or those opposed to the amendment stood up and disrupted and failed the Prime Minister from responding or giving an explanation as to the deployment. The Member of the Parliament said they were not ready to have a discussion on any matter when they were literally under the barrel of the gun. And so they caused a significant discussion inside the parliament chamber, forcing the Deputy Speaker Jacob Olanya to postpone, to adjourn the House and defer any discussions to next week, which we are still waiting. Now, immediately that happened, the members of the opposition were very ecstatic. They chanted, they jumped, they blew whistles in a scene that has not been seen in the Ugandan parliament in a very, very long time. It's also important to note, Douglas and Sulaiman, that you had, for the first time, or one of those occasions, a full house, both on the opposition benches and on the benches of the ruling party, as well as the independents. So the representation was very good, even when the particular item of presentation of a motion seeking leave of parliament to present that private member's bill seeking the amendment of Article 102B was not on the order paper as had been stated, as had been promised. Both the members of the ruling party, members of the opposition, and independents expected that to close the matter for discussion today. And like you said earlier, you're right in saying that some members of cabinet, held the press conference in the office of the Prime Minister to endorse a decision taken by the party caucus yesterday to allow a backbencher, Rafael Majuzi, to present this motion.
I see. Well, gentlemen, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue a discussion of the suppression of political dissent in Uganda.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a three-nation Africa visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Tanzania. Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered, reporting on democracy in Africa. On the Road with Shaka, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight we're discussing the suppression of political dissent in Uganda. Our panelists are Charles Mwangu here, East African Bureau Chief in Kampala, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst in Johannesburg. Sorry, in Durban. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 6. Suleiman, some analysts are saying that Mr. Museveni is following the blueprint in the region, where, of course, in Rwanda, the Kagame got to extend his stay in power for a number of years, I think up to 2034. In Burundi, it was similar, like in Uganda, although it was more violent. But indeed, again, President Pierre Nkurunziza pulled it off, and he's there. Suleiman, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. I'm listening.
Yeah, so do you think Mr. Museveni is following what is happening elsewhere in the region?
Actually, it's not even on the region alone. It is spread even across the continent. The instability, the attempt by leaders to cling to power using dubious means is continuing. Thank God, Dos Santos in Angola has realized that it doesn't pay and it does not contribute anymore and has at last stepped down. But they are still determined, those who are still there. We are still have in Cameroon. Cameroon is restless. Right now, as we talk, in Togo, the demonstrations are going on. It is very tense. It is as tense as it is in Uganda. Ethiopia is also restless in the same way. DRC has not rested at all. It is still restless because Kabila is trying to use the same methods as which, the one which Museveni is using in Uganda, or the one which Kagame used. So as you are saying, plus others, so will they succeed or not succeed? We should know that the conditions which determine their success or not, they are running against time. We have got a restless continent. We have got a surging young population, bedeviled by growing unemployment, growing inequality, growing poverty against these regimes which are so corrupt. And then we are also in this enlightened young population, which is seeing the situation as it is. Which situation means that those countries which are under democracy, they are having some progress, but those which are under vested leadership like theirs, there seems to be no progress towards betterment of their lives. So they want to force it, but they are going to force it through under very heavy difficulties.
I see. Charles, as we know that in the Ugandan parliament, the ruling party has the majority of members, and if one pulls something through, it would be easy to pull it through. How do you see this thing ending? Because the pressure seems to be mounting, as you say, from both civil society, religious leaders, the general populace. Do you think they'll pull it off?
Douglas, if you could allow me to start with the question you asked to Sulaiman.
Yes, go ahead.
I actually think that, thank you. I actually think that President Museveni is following the blueprint from other leaders in the region. Actually, they have been learning from him. You will remember that in 2005, the Ugandan constitution was changed to remove term limits. Now, that is the level where a country like Burundi is. You remember also that Rwanda has only made an exception for President Paul Kagame and has actually maintained term limits in their constitution. Now, President Museveni, he's famous. When he was recognized as a new breed of African leader, he said and wrote a book titled What is Africa's Problem? And he said, in his answer to that question, leaders who stay in power for too long. Now, what has been happening, past when he came in 1986, he said, we are only here to lead a transitional period. He wanted 2 years. His comrades in arms at the time and political commissars at the time told him 2 years would be a joke. He wouldn't have done anything. And they convinced him to stay on for four years to make a constitution. And now we have the country and its leadership and its presidency has gone through its evolution that are cyclical. Every 2 years when he has promised, he has put a deadline for himself, he's been able to adjust it. So I do not think that he's reading the script from either Pierre Nkurunziza or Paul Kagame or even the Democratic Republic of Congo's Joseph Kabila. They are reading from his script to a very large measure. He's been around longer than all of them, and he's looked at as the grandfather within the region. But to be sensitive with that, yes. Number two, to your question about how this thing is likely to pan out, I think it's a bit early, looking at events that happened today, to be able to conclusively predict where this might end. But like I said earlier, there is significant sentiment opposed to changing the constitution again, especially with Ugandan thinking this is the last step that remains after you removed term limits. There has been significant mobilization of the ruling party side to mobilize and justify. I've just been looking through a document which the East African will be reporting about in our next edition, which is the Bible of those campaigners for the change. There have been some demonstrations locking in most areas. There was one in Katete yesterday. There have been demonstrations in Arua, which is northwest of Uganda. There have been some demonstrations in Kabare, in Kisoro, in Barara, and they care of people supporting removal of the age limit. Now, the difference is the police has handled those in support completely differently from those opposed. It's like trying to shut down anybody who is opposed to debating to the change. So they haven't allowed equal debate. This was the basis of the American ambassador's statement yesterday and the statement that came out on the European Union. How this thing pans out in the next few days is going to have to be looked at from how this window, the delay of the presentation today, or what window it allows both those opposed and those in support to mobilize and marshal their forces. You must understand that President Museveni is not in the country. He's still in New York. He has been in New York for the United Nations General Assembly. Once he gets back in here, this thing is happening when he's not in the country. And once he gets back into the country, what direction he will try to give to these people. His practice has been, he's been extremely, he's tried to pretend to be detached from what is going on and left this to his lieutenants. talk about it and, and the political party. Not the mainstream political party, but other actors that are acting outside the national resistance movement. Now, when he comes back, he wants to continue to work behind the scenes to push what his agenda is. And we will be able to determine, one, whether the police reserve remains as it is, crush any of the deposit, whether the military lends a hand like it has done so far, and how his party pushes forward, and especially the behavior of the Deputy Speaker, Jacob Olanya, and Rebecca Kadaga in allowing the motion to go ahead next week.
I see. Suleiman, do you think it's humanly possible for Mr. Museveni to pretend to be detached when his forces are surrounding Parliament, virtually putting members of Parliament under gunpoint?
The problem with Mr. Museveni is that he's shameless. He can lie in broad daylight. He's not afraid of saying he's not in charge. There are other he always blames others anyway. Anyway, whatever he does, the fact of the matter is that him as a leader, he has outlived his usefulness.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the messianic myth has already lost credibility. The socio-economic challenges ahead of him, whether he succeeds to change the constitution, are so huge that he will find it difficult to carry through up to his death. So we wish him the best of luck if he can be able to muzzle everybody, but it will not be an easy trip because the youth have woken up the way they woken up in Togo, the way they woken up in Burkina Faso. So he has to be prepared to kill many before he can go up to his death with the country.
Charles has wound up for the first time. As Suleiman says, the youth have woken up. But for the first time, religious leaders came out against this maneuver. Briefly.
I mean, many constituencies, including the religious community, are trying to find a way to strike a balance. Their statement was to say, if you want this thing, take it to a referendum. I do not think the religious leaders have come out as strongly as they ought to state a clear position and say either let the constitution be amended or let the constitution stay as it is. And now the youth are such a large community in this country, and it's difficult to tell exactly where they will belong. Do the youth who are debating on the side of the opposition represent the majority, or will those who are susceptible to being influenced to support the change take the bill? What about the large silent majority which is suffering, is trying to take out a living day by day and don't want to get involved in the political discourse in this country? Now, that is difficult to bear at this stage.
I see. Suleiman, last word. How do you see things ending up?
I think, by and large, countries like Uganda are already due for change. It is morally unacceptable for one leader to be elected for 30 years. Exemplary leaders like Nyerere reached a time when they had to give up power. I cannot compare to Mandela, who only took one term. Countries have got a lot of human resources. You have got young men and women brilliant enough to take that country to the next level. Before Rawlings gave up power, people thought he was such a revolutionary. If he leaves, then maybe Ghana will collapse. But when Kufo took over, he made changes which has put Ghana up to where he is now, with the other changes as they termed, as they changed in terms. So I think it is high time Seven leads the young generation to take over the country to the next level.
All right, we are out of time, gentlemen. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks, Charles Mwanguhia, East African Bureau Chief in Kampala, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. We're back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks once again for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.